WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Friends, this has been a pretty busy week here at Film Sociology offices and WFYI. Some in-work training and being on the air for several days. And not one, but two movies opening this week. Two completely different movies, both recommended. So good week here. But I do want to start with Dead People We Like, because we never have time for Dead People We Don't Like. I want to note that last week's show was already completed before hearing about, I heard about the death of actor Stella Stevens. So we will raise a glass to her right now. We are losing our sex symbols from the 60s and 70s between this and Raquel Welch. So, you know, cherish them while we still have them here on Earth. So Stella Stevens, going all the way back from the 50s to, gosh, I think she was still constantly working until the 2010s. But she has, what is great about her, she has appearances in several films that have their own individual followings, case in point. I'll scroll a little, but she's got a good footnote in pop culture, especially in the film world. Credits go all the way back to the 1950s. I believe she received a Golden Globe nomination for Best Newcomer for Say One for Me from 1959. Appeared in Little Abner. Did a bunch of TV in the 50s and 60s, but she was in an Elvis movie. She was in Girls, Girls, Girls. She was in a Jerry Lewis movie. She was in The Nutty Professor. She was in the film version of The Courtship of Eddie's Father. She was in a Matt Helm film, The Silencers. She was in Where Angels Go, Trouble Follows from 1968. For you fans of Sam Peckinpah, of course, she was in The Battle of Cable Hogue in 1970. Was in the Jim Brown film Slaughter in 1972, was in The Poseidon Adventure, so she got to be in a disaster movie. And yes, Salute to the Pink Shirt in 1972. Another blaxploitation film, she was the Dragon Lady in Cleopatra Jones and the Casino of Gold in 1975. Starred in Las Vegas Lady in 75, the Peter Bogdanovich film Nickelodeon in 1976, The Manitou, oh man, that's a hard one, from 1978. And it was going through, and I think the last thing I saw her in, the last film I remember seeing her in, was Chained Heat in 1983, where she plays Captain Taylor, and then continued to work constantly in the 80s, a lot of television, a lot of low-budget films that unfortunately I didn't get a chance to see, like The Terror Within 2 and Eyes of the Stranger from 1993. But yeah, just kept working all the way up until her last credit was in 2010 with Megaconda, because that's what you did in the teens, 2010s. So salute to Stella Stevens. All right. As I mentioned at the beginning, two distinctly different films, and this is why I love this show, is I can see these two films and enjoy them equally for what they are, and you get to hear these are your pledge dollars at work, friends. We're going to start with Emily, the new not really biopic, but it's sort of. It's a look into the world of Emily Bronte. And this is what happens to her being as the outsider of the Bronte family. All focuses on her sister Charlotte, who everyone says is going to be the one that makes the success, the most successful of the Bronte children. And Emily is looked upon as the outsider, the one who goes against social norms, is deemed the strange one, you know, which was a big deal back in the Bronte's times. It has that kind of Masterpiece Theater look to it, but it is pushed to extremes. And kudos to writer and director Frances O'Connor for doing that. She knows these costume dramas. The first thing a lot of folks noticed Frances O'Connor in was the 1999 film version of Mansfield Park. And she would later be in Bedazzled, AI, Artificial Intelligence, The Importance of Being Earnest, Timeline, and those. This is her first film as a writer and director, and it's very strong. So the elements of being stuck in her, of Emily being stuck in her own world, are really heightened. The love scenes are more than what you would get from Masterpiece Theater. It's some really nice work. The music is really off-putting, and that adds to her Emily's problems with the world around her. Emma McKay, for you fans of Sex Education, plays Emily Bronte, and it is the classic outsider underdog story in these kind of period costume dramas. But we get to see her complexities and her problems that lead up to her writing Wuthering Heights and dying at the age of 30. So there's a fascinating love-hate relationship. I shouldn't say love-hate, but the conflict between her father. Emily's father is a pastor, Patrick Bronte, played by famous that guy Adrian Dunbar, and his associate pastor, played by Oliver Jackson Cohen, is William Waitman, and Emily and William have a nice back and forth on what should be done and what shouldn't be done. And so if you like costume dramas, but if you like them pushed a little bit, so they're not as TV friendly, and we've gotten those over the years, you want to check out Emily. And a nice sister rivalry between Emily and Charlotte in this film. So, yeah, look for Emily. That's opening this weekend. It's on courtesy of Bleecker Street. And then, friends, I follow up Emily with Cocaine Bear. Yes, this is opening. The first question, are they trying to create an immediate cult film like Snakes on a Plane? Not quite. Although, you know, the title and the concept itself screams that. This is inspired by an actual incident, and there's a really lovely Wikipedia joke early on in the film. In the 80s, there was, or I forget the time era, when the actual event happened, but there was an incident where a bear consumed a massive amount of cocaine. It didn't turn into a movie monster. It overdosed and died. But that's not going to let that get in the way of a fascinating story. So in this one in 1980, we have a bunch of cocaine is thrown outside of a plane and it needs to be picked up. This is a deal that's done by a character played by Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta's last film, folks. And his son, played by Alden Ehrenreich, he enlists his buddy Bob, played by Isaiah Whitlock Jr. So, yes, you get Han Solo and Ice Cube as kind of screw-ups, especially Eddie, especially the Alden Ehrenreich character, having to go find the drugs that are all over the Tennessee mountains. Carrie Russell's in this as a mom and a nurse whose 12-year-old daughter and her friend have skipped school and gone out into the woods. We have Margot Martindale, who gets to brandish a gun and be a badass as a park ranger. Jesse Tyler Ferguson shows up as one of the nature experts. There's a lot of good actors in this. It almost feels overqualified. Almost. Sorry, it's not Isaiah Whitlock Jr. playing. It's O'Shea Jackson Jr. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. is a police officer who's on the case. I am terrible. Sorry. O'Shea Jackson Jr. is the other crony who has to go find the missing bags, missing bricks of cocaine. So, and we get a seat, obviously, a lot of CGI bear work. Watching this film, if you can see it with a crowd, the better. The later I think you can see it in the evening, the better. It does have a midnight movie vibe about it. It is a little more, it's a little gorier than I had anticipated, but for my taste, it doesn't go enough. There is, and I will set an example. And this is the dilemma I had while watching Cocaine Bear. I know, right? If you've seen the trailer, the film really starts to go bonkers with the ambulance chase, and I want to give away a whole lot there. But there are some moments where it was you heard a genuine verbal reaction from the audience, and it involves one of the characters, and I want to give away who it is. But there is that, oh my God, they went there moment. I wish they had gotten there sooner with this film. It's still, I mean, oh, you still get some, you know, you get some jump scares that are kind of ill-attempted. But the attack moments and, you know, the Jaws feel to it, especially early on, or Paws feel because it's a bear. So I think if it got too gory, it would be off-putting to Universal and probably off-putting to the audiences, and probably then would turn into a trauma film for you Lloyd Kaufman fans. And if it goes down an even bloodier path, you probably don't get these actors involved in it. And everybody, like I say, overqualified, they're doing their job. You could have easily made this a really inexpensive film with inexperienced actors, and you probably wouldn't care for them as much. So it does help that you have Margot Martindale and Kerry Russell and Ray Liotta and everybody else involved in this. So that part... So you got to take the good with the bad, or you got to take the balance out with it. Another aspect that I don't want to give away too much is when we get to the climax of the film, I realize it starts turning into a warped Disney nature film from the 60s and 70s. Your Swiss Family Robinsons and those types of films. Not quite Roar because it's CG. But there are at the climax of the film, there are good guys, there are good people, there are bad people, and then there's nature as a third party. And I remember some of those live-action Disney films from the 60s and 70s that have that feel to it, only it's Cocaine Bear. So I appreciated that. So and kudos to Elizabeth Banks. Elizabeth Banks is the director of this film. So now, you know, besides being a fine actress, she's now producing stuff. She's now directing stuff. This is, you know, she's done, well, I know she did a segment of Movie 43. We won't talk about that. But she did Pitch Perfect 2. Okay, you're part of a franchise. She directed Charlie's Angels, reboot, nobody cares. Okay, but you got your foot in. And now this. So the diversity of, you know, a musical comedy, an action reboot, and now this ridiculous film. Good on her. And if it gets her to continue to direct more, absolutely, all for it. So, yeah, it does deliver. I think it's when it comes to you have the title, now make the film, it's better than Snakes on a Plane. It helps that you have the cast. If you want more blood, you're not going to you get some, but not enough for one's taste. But that's what you get when you have a talented cast, and it's done by a studio like Universal. So, yeah, check it out. This is when I say it's a beer and pizza movie, that's a compliment. So, yeah, it's one of those. Obviously, you're not seeing this to go see Emily. You're going to see Cocaine Bear. And yeah, so the CG stuff is silly, and it's set in the 80s, so there's some easy punchlines about 80s music that we get. And stick through the credits, there's a couple of Easter eggs in there, but yeah, it does what it's supposed to. Maybe not enough for my taste, but it's still it's a night at the movies. So yeah, Emily and Cocaine Bear opening this week. Friends, your pledge dollars at work. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Okay, we'll go around the horn a little bit. Just a couple of notes around the before we grab a pencil, I should say we'll go around the horn. At IU Cinema, 4 o'clock, Friday, February 24th, The Gluttony of Light, as a part of the Forever Queer Community Memory Survival Series. And then following that at 7 o'clock on Friday, February 24th, Queer Time, Queer Space, Jubilee, plus new queer shorts. And then Friday night, 10 o'clock, is the Not Quite Midnight series, Showgirls. Saturday, February 25th at 4 o'clock is a part of the City Lights film series. This goes out to my buddies Jane and Judy from 1969. They shoot horses, don't they? And if you're a fan of Hands on a Hard Body, you should check out They Shoot Horses, Don't They? This is the father of those stories. Saturday, February 25th at 7 p.m., Handmade, the films of Stacey Steers. As part of the Underground Film Series. Sunday, February 26th at 2:30 p.m., the world premiere, Dance on Screen, 4 short films. And then Tuesday, February 28th at 7 o'clock, as a part of the International Art House Series, one of the big films that was talked about in 2022, RRR. And then Thursday, March 2nd at 7 p.m., Savvy. Friday, March 3rd is Tar at 7 o'clock. All of that is opening at IU Cinema. And then this weekend at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m. from 1955, Jane Wyman, Rock Hudson, All That Heaven Allows. So make a note of that. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we go grabbing a pencil, there is one video I got to watch this week. I'm hopefully going to catch up on some around the house over the weekend. From IndiePix, the 2021 documentary, Ruth Weiss, One More Step West is the Sea. And this is a story of one of the most famous jazz poets of the Beat Generation. We get a very old and very smoky voice, Ruth Weiss, who tells her story coinciding with current poetry projects that she was working on. Her family fled Berlin and Vienna from the Nazis as a child before winding up in the U.S., and then taking her poetry to Chicago, New Orleans, San Francisco, back to, and then eventually New York. But she was in that group of Jack Kerouac, Bob Kaufman, Neil Cassidy, of the Beat Poets, but still performing at the age of 90. And some stories she will tell and some she will not. And in a way, the film is structured like one of her pieces of poetry, because it looks like it goes randomly back and forth between her upbringing to the current work that she does, but there is a madness to her method. So if you're really into the Beat poetry of the 50s, this is worth checking out. I did not know of Ruth Weiss's work. The other names that I dropped earlier, I did recognize. But I'm glad I got to see this. And seeing her do poetry with minimal accompaniment of musical instruments of various kinds, even a hollow log in lieu of bongos. So anyway, I'm a sucker for documentaries about the creative process, and we get the creative process and a fascinating story of fleeing one oppression and jumping into the free beat movement, and it really wasn't that free. So anyway, look for the documentary Ruth Weiss, One More Step West is the Sea, and this is out by IndiePix. My guys over at Golden Globus Theater this week, they wrap up their Blaxploitation Month with a lighter fare compared to the other episodes. I'm on the episode of Detroit 9000. This week is The Monkey Hustle with Rudy Ray Moore and Yaphet Kotto. And lots of great shots of the south side of Chicago, untouched at that time. So it's kind of it was kind of a Blaxploitation version of The Sting. But yeah, anyway, fun stuff there from the Golden Globus guys. Next week they're doing Speed, and word is they're going to be starting to do some erotic thrillers from the 80s and early 90s. Can't wait to hear about. Oh, look, there's a pop-up came up. So no, can't wait to hear that from the guys. All right, let's grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you've been able to watch some movies that are good, that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start on Twitter with your Canadian girlfriend, hey Joe, who writes Giovanni's Island, animation from Japan about when the Soviets snagged Japanese islands at the end of World War II. Tony writes Trees Lounge was pretty rad. Never seen it before until this week. That happens, Tony. It, you know, as we talked about. hi, Emily. I'm hoping Emily Wheeler, who I've had as a guest on the show, and we were writing about something else, but she is breaking down the camp moments from the Fast and Furious films. I think I need to have her on the show so we can talk about that a little more in depth. So Brian writes, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, 1971. My son read the book and watched the film for the first time. He was disappointed they changed the giant squirrels to geese. Okay. But he was okay with Charlie getting screamed at by Wonka, even though he was genuinely a good kid. All right. Well, he's a kid. That's fine. It gets better, I hope. Brooke writes, The Dark Knight and Whiplash. Hey, Gunner. Gunner writes, Winter's Bone, 2010. Jennifer Lawrence and John Hawks with Oscar nominations. Great film. Yeah, it is. That's a... Ozark Noir, I believe, that's kind of where that started. So I'm glad you got to check that out, Gunner. Let's see. I think that's it on Twitter. No, Shannon writes, Widows, loved Wild is the Wind by Nina Simone and The Big Unknown by Sade, and watching Liam Neeson bite it. Way to give that away, Shannon. Thanks. So there you go. That is what is on Twitter. We go over to Facebook. We start with Dustin, who writes, The Inspector General, Strangers on a Train, Summer and Smoke. Hold on. The 1996 Hamlet, Hands on a Hard Body, the documentary, as well as Crash. Okay, I crack up because Dustin had two films that reminded me of some stuff. The Kenneth Branagh Hamlet from 1996. That is the one and only time I bought movie tickets over the phone. My lovely now wife, we were dating at the time. We went to go see Hamlet at a movie theater in the city, in Chicago. I was living in the suburbs at the time. And, to borrow a joke from Dennis Miller, I'm not on the phone this long with friends contemplating suicide, to get these tickets. And there were rock concerts easier to get into. I mean, people were running and jumping and claiming seats. The only thing missing were beach balls and lighters when this film went, because it had an intermission and half the Screen Actors Guild in it. So I'm glad you got to experience that, Dustin. Summer and Smoke, this particular one, with Lawrence Harvey. And we were on vacation many moons ago down in Florida. And I always brought a bag of DVDs with me just in case, you know, bad weather or what have you. And we had a rainy morning, and my wife is on her laptop, and I'm watching this. And from the other room, I hear my lovely wife go, "That sounds like bad Tennessee Williams." And I went, "That's because it is Tennessee Williams." That's my wife's ear. All right. Thank you, Dustin. Lou Harry writes, King Kong Lives, Live Free or Die Harder, The Cable Guy, M. Butterfly, Last Survivors, City Hall, and Life After Beth. Eric has some first views of the Fablemans Rock and Roll High School. Wow. Congratulations, Eric. With Facebook friend PJ Souls. That's good. And the Ramones, of course. And Empire of Light. The rewatch, Gone with the Wind. That's for you, Bianca. And Ken Burns is still magnificent. The Civil War, a Blu-ray upgrade I got for Christmas, and the perfect companion to Scarlett O'Hara's version of things. Yes, it is, Eric. Thank you. Nancy writes, Top Gun Maverick was fine, not Oscar-worthy, though. Okay. Kevin writes, The Outfit and Duel. Sam writes, Sam Wattemeyer, we watched all five Scream movies over the weekend and obviously saw Cocaine Bear last night. He was on the same aisle as I was. Jamie writes, All Dogs Go to Heaven and The Red Tent. Helen writes, 12 Years a Slave. Doug writes, two early MGM melodramas, Lady of the Night with Norma Shearer and Romance with Greta Garbo. More Hitchcock, Rebecca, Vertigo, North by Northwest, and The Birds, and more from 2022, Empire of Light, EO, all the animated shorts, and all the live-action shorts. Thank you, Doug. Tom writes, Captain Blood, Olivia de Havilland at age 19. Rocky, still a sleeper great film. Can it be a sleeper great film if it won Best Picture? I'm just saying. I still think Network should have got it. But no, I think where you're going, Tom, is I think you forget how good Rocky is because it is marred down by the sequels, and now it is branched off into Creed land. But I see where you're going. Wow. And then he writes, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Bozeman's Ghost is all over this, hard pass. Taylor writes, The Pez Outlaw, Black Adam, Amsterdam, Death on the Nile, Lightning Strikes Twice, and Red Sun. David writes, The Woman King, Nope, Harold and Maude, and it adds, first time ever, and it was on a plane. Wow, I hope you're all right, David. That was the first Betamax tape my father bought. That was my introduction to dark comedy. You're going to be great. You already are, so there's that. Also, David saw Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, Let There Be Drums, the documentary, as well as Clerks 3 and Fall. Robert Muggy writes, EO, The Fablemans, Thunder on the Hill, and Fantastic Voyage, Sky Point to Raquel. Mike writes, Man of the Year and The Rainmaker. John writes, Heaven Can Wait. Jeff writes, Top Gun Maverick, The Fablemans, and The Woman King. Amanda's been to the library. She watched Suspicion. That goes out to you, Helen, monkey face. Godfather Part 2. Gwen Shamblin, Starving for Salvation. All right. Also Whiplash, Rumblefish, and Flawless. Thank you there. Lucy saw Everything Everywhere All at Once. Aaron writes Carnage. Corey writes How It Ends and The Page Master. Britt writes Road to Perdition, The Mummy, and all of the Indiana Jones movies. Terry writes Ride the High Country. It was Sam Peckinpah's birthday. Good call there, Terry. Rachel writes Candle's Shoe. Kathleen writes Elvis. Daniel writes Sabrina. And finally, Michelle writes Matrix Resurrections, Overboard, Geostorm, and Made in Manhattan. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you. And we've had a few on there. That was really solid. Anyway, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. We should have some guests, some company on next week's show. You'll just have to tune in and find out. And don't forget, Golden Globus Theater this week, they are doing Monkey Hustle because they can. All right, and thanks for listening, and take care, everybody. We'll see you next week. See you on the podcast. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!